You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
June the 16th, 2020, President Trump is and has signed that executive order on policing, as he says, to build trust in law enforcement. He did so in the Rose Garden a few minutes ago. The purpose of the order, touching on the use of best practices for police, information sharing to track officers who have repeated complaints against them, federal incentives for police departments to deploy non-police experts on issues such as mental health, homelessness, and addiction. It won't be enough in the minds of the leftists because we'll still have police, and they don't want police, and they don't want them getting money, and bottom line, they don't want them anyway. Perfect example, downtown Seattle, where they still have protesters occupying, holding a six-block area named now Capitol Hill Organized Protest, or CHOP, and they declare it cop-free. President Trump has made it clear, I will step in with federal forces to clear them out if I need to, if the, as he says, the radical left governor and the mayor of Seattle do not take care of it. Take back your city now. And neither the governor nor the Seattle mayor have expressed any desire to take it back. They're just willing to let it happen. And in fact, the Seattle City Council voting yesterday to ban police, voting unanimously to ban police from using chokeholds, okay, but then also any crowd control devices such as tear gas, pepper spray. In other words, if they get a crowd and a riot going, you can't fire tear gas, you can't fire pepper spray. The next option of force would be rubber bullets. That'll be banned soon. You watch. All right, bring out the fire trucks and hit them with water. That'll be banned. They don't want peace and control. And in Portland, those police in that city reporting a civil disturbance overnight, protesters turning violent, 10 arrests, one officer injured as objects were thrown at them. It was again to be a largely peaceful protest in Oregon, as they have been having. But then last night, here came the violence. I'm telling you over and over again, when these things are still in play and darkness falls, the thugs come out in force. Word out of New York City that three New York Police Department officers had to go to the hospital last night. They were drinking milkshakes at a Shake Shack, and they said that something's funny about this, something's wrong with it. They were afraid they'd been poisoned. It turns out that there was nothing in the shake. Apparently, according to investigators from the New York Police Department, no criminality by any of the employees. But it's a fear for police. Wherever they go to order something, what have they done to the food I'm getting? That is such a far cry from what we've had in the past, where often a restaurant would, for an officer on duty, probably give them a meal or some or great discount. Not bribing, just appreciating. We've got some good new numbers on the economic front. Retail sales jumping higher in May. They expected an 8% gain, and we saw them jump 17.7%. It is possible New York City could enter phase two of reopening June the 22nd if the indicators and the state deem ready. That's according to the mayor of New York City. In the meantime, there's a new model cited by the White House now predicting 200,000 U.S. deaths from coronavirus by October 1. That's an increase of 30,000 deaths since last week's projection. We are seeing an increase in 18 states of newly reported cases. We don't know if that has to do with them beginning to reopen the economy or just better testing. 10 states seeing steady numbers, 22 states seeing a downward trend. That includes Missouri and Illinois. Joe Biden has now gotten the endorsement of Planned Parenthood. No big surprise there. And President Trump campaign going after him on that point, accusing him of being controlled by radical ideas, arguing that he will force taxpayers to foot the bill for abortions. Planned Parenthood with Joe Biden now means Joe Biden is accepting you can abort the baby up to the moment of birth. You can abort. You suddenly don't want it, abort it. Or even after it's born, you may decide, I don't like the look of it, let's abort it. Joe Biden and the left signing on to that. You keep that in mind this election day.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, good morning.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Let me give you a preview of what's coming up for this last hour. We're going to wrap up with the question, is the Black Lives Matter movement a political party? A political party bent on completely turning our government upside down. I'll share some of the thoughts that Tucker Carlson put on his program last night. We're also going to be joined by a guest, John Malcolm, an expert on constitutional affairs and law and order, on police reform, and the president just signing that executive order, hoping to build trust in law enforcement. We'll break that down in more detail. And also how the New York Times publisher is now regretting that he fired his editorial page director because of the Tom Cotton article, op-ed, I should say, that was published. And also, at the same time, they turn around and they have one of their New York Times correspondents. And I have a hard time using the term correspondent because they're voicing a personal opinion. A correspondent is not doing that. A correspondent is supposed to be reporting, just like a news anchor should be reporting, not voicing particular views. I never did in the 50-plus years as a news anchor, and no one should be doing it. But we have reached a point now where, no, you can express your views all the time. We don't have to label it. We don't need to call it commentary and opinion. We just go ahead and spout it. Though everybody will take it as fact. Well, I don't, and I know many of you don't. But let's begin with this latest situation in Seattle. The chaos continues. They were going to be Chaz, remember? Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. Then they decide, let's change it to CHOP, Capitol Hill Occupation Protest, or Occupied Protest. I don't even know what they're trying to say anymore, and I doubt they do. There seems to be no real understanding. But, as I noted with the Seattle City Council a moment ago, They're moving forward. They think they have a way to improve their police department. And in a unanimous vote, they voted to ban police from using chokeholds. All right. If it's acceptable in some police agencies, obviously you need to look at how it's used, under what conditions, and be aware of the possible harm you're doing to the suspect you're holding. But they're also wanting to ban any crowd control devices such as tear gas or pepper spray. Well, it makes no difference if it's a riot attacking police or anyone else or a business. You can't use tear gas or pepper spray to break them up. Not going to be allowed to do that. The council's measure now prevents Seattle police from owning, renting, storing, using any of those weapons, including chemical irritants. And here comes something that I said a moment ago, maybe they'll go this route. But I also added, watch for them to ban that. They did. I just didn't get the chance to read all of the story earlier. They are also banning water cannons. You can't use the water against the protesters either. And acoustical devices, you know, loud noises that hurt their eardrums and chase them back until they get hearing protection. You can't use any weapon that would cause pain or discomfort on multiple people. This is Seattle. Seattle, you think you got it bad now. You wait till this begins to take hold. You've got a 6-block-plus area in the Capitol Hill neighborhood, now under control by a bunch of protesters. And that's using a term gently. But they are now controlling this area. No cops allowed. And there's some things happening inside that area that we'll tell you about in a moment, according to one of the reports coming out. But Seattle is cracking down. And, of course, the overall thing is they want to ban police, certainly defund them. The Seattle occupiers of the CHOP area say we want to take all the money you spend on police and use that money to make all the illegals in the nation legal. And give them that money, I guess. You know what they're doing in Albuquerque? This happened hours before police had to detain members of an armed civilian group. The mayor of New Mexico's largest city announced that unarmed social workers, not police, will now respond to certain 911 calls. He said, we've placed more and more issues on the plates of officers who are not trained, despite their best efforts, despite some training. They're not totally trained to be a social worker or an addiction counselor or deal with things around child abuse when they're answering a call. We should have trained professionals do this instead of folks with a gun and a badge. I know the intent of what they're trying to do. And yes, police are the first to admit they get to a situation that, you know, we probably need someone to come deal with this situation for these kids or been abandoned or whatever. It's a social issue as opposed to an immediate 911 call of someone's immediate life in threat, under threat. But I'm thinking, do you want to be one of those social workers, unarmed, going into some of these scenarios? Hey, Larry, we want you to be one of our unarmed social workers, and we just got a call that this guy is pretty drunk. We think he's addicted or something, so we need you to go in there and talk to him and get him to come out and go to treatment. How about that, Larry? I think I'll find another job. It is tough enough with armed police officers when they go into these situations and they suddenly find that they're facing weapons and a threat or violence because the person is unstable. You'd really believe an unarmed social worker is going to go in some of the cases where you have someone who's mentally unstable and they're going to talk them down and make everything nice and kissy-kissy? You think so? That is going to lead to more tragedy. It won't be the police officers hurt at that point. It's going to be the social workers. I have a high regard for social workers, by the way. I really do. because I know some of the cases they have to deal with. And they have to go check them out. They have to go back to the house and check it from time to time, making sure the kids are being properly cared for, and they don't know what they're going to find each time they go in. I really admire them, and they are doing the Lord to work and help and take care of people. They're not getting paid really that great at all, but they're also many times facing a violent situation. And yet they're supposed to go in unarmed. Once they're in there, if they have trouble, then they will call police. But that's what they're doing in Albuquerque. A first-of-its-kind cabinet-level department that would respond to calls on inebriation, homelessness, addiction, and mental health. Granted, many officers are not trained properly to deal with those. There needs to be more training for the officers. I don't want to make them social workers, but they do need to hold and have some understanding of how to handle some of these things. Detroit, by the way, is one of the cities that had made a decision to defund police. In 2014, funding for police department chopped 20%, starting at that point, 20% in the last 6 years. Wages for cops cut 10%. They've never recovered, accounting for inflation. Health benefits for retired cops stopped. Pension payments postponed. So how's it been in Detroit since they did all of this? Well, a working mother of two probably sums it up. We don't have enough police as it is. People are acting the fool out here. Now, you know the police aren't going to be coming around this summer with all that's going on. What are the children supposed to do? During the 80 days of the coronavirus lockdown in Detroit, 18 children were shot in Detroit. They don't have enough officers. They cut it back. They reduced the pay of the ones that are there. And if they stayed, couldn't get a job elsewhere, they're already stretched way too thin. And yet you have some of these leftists saying, if we have fewer police, we'll have fewer problems with police and we'll be safer. Right. Yeah, right. And I'll remind you that some are with the belief that, well, it must be all Black Lives Matter activists and the black people that really want to see this happen. That's not true. You got whites that are all part of the movement and push as well, and other minority groups that are pushing for it. But I'll give you some balance. The president of the NAACP says, I will not endorse a defund the police movement. I will not do it. NAACP President Derek Johnson said, I back the energy behind the movement, but I cannot support it. I don't really know what it means anyway. I'm talking to people, and I get three different explanations. He said, we know there needs to be a change in the culture of policing, but defunding police, having fewer police on the streets? Then criminal justice reform advocate Alice Marie Johnson. Remember, she was released from federal prison in June 2018, her life sentence commuted by President Trump. She was a Tennessee grandmother sentenced in 1997 to life in prison without parole, convicted of drug conspiracy and money laundering, the first and only crime she had ever done. She knows she made a bad mistake, but a life prison sentence for that? It was brought to President Trump's attention. She's been in jail since 97. He got her out. I'll ask the question, and I don't know the answer. Did Obama know about her story and didn't do anything? Well, I do know whether or not he knew about it. She was still there when Trump came into office. So here's a story from Chaos, Capitol Hill Organized Protest Zone in Seattle. This is by a journalist, Andy Ngo. He often has reported on some of these Antifa movements. He said, you're going to see during the day peaceful businesses and peaceful activities, people singing, riding on the sidewalk, chanting, planting their little gardens. Everything's nice and quiet. But come nightfall, in that area of Seattle, the occupied zone, he said, last night it was made very clear. One person on a microphone and a loudspeaker able to sick a mob of probably 100 people going down to this business. It was several blocks away. They all just descended on it. pure anarchy. They pushed against a fence, rushed in. He said it could have been extremely violent. Thank goodness it wasn't. What had happened is that the owner of that business had caught, in his opinion, one of the protesters of the camp were trying to steal from his business, so he was holding them. And word got out that he was holding them, and here came the mob. Get him out. Get him loose. And if he was looking for police, come help him. Police couldn't get there in time. He also pointed out there's a Trader Joe's that just announced it's closing indefinitely because of security and safety issues. So more businesses are closing up. Those who were counting on maybe getting some support and food and stuff of that nature for the businesses that were in place as they took over, they're moving out. They're boarding up and going away for right now. And where are the politicians in protecting those citizens, those taxpayer businesses? Oh no, we're just kind of like the mayor had said. We're just looking for a summer of love, and everything will be just fine. Take a break. When we come back, the New York Times publisher admitting, I have regrets about what I did. Doesn't seem to be anxious to change anything. And also a little bit later, an interview with John Malcolm from the Heritage Foundation on police reform. What works, what might work, and what never will work. All of that and more. Still to come. Please stand by. You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, of course, the other day when Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas wrote his piece, the op-ed in the New York Times, that we might need to send in the troops to stop the violence across the nation, referring to the Insurrection Act, didn't say we should and immediately do it, but if we don't see any resolution, we should. The New York Times checked it, fact-checked it, and finally printed it. And at the time, the editorial director defended it when the complaint started, and so did the New York Times publisher, standing with his editorial page editor. But, as Senator Cotton said, the child mob inside the New York Times got louder and louder until finally the editorial director had to resign. And the New York Times publisher sent him packing. And now he's being quoted as saying, I really lament the loss of a talent I respect and admire. In other words, someone he thought was really good lost his job because the publisher gave in to all the child mob inside his own business. And now the new deputy editorial page editor stepping into that role and saying that we are still looking for better ways to do the op-ed, but anyone who sees, quote, any piece of opinion journalism, including headlines or social posts or photos, you name it, that gives you the slightest pause, please call or text me immediately. What, did she not hear me yesterday? I guess I got to contact her directly. Didn't you run an op-ed the other day by someone claiming if we have fewer police, we'll have less crime? And the neighborhoods will be safer. There are no facts for that. And obviously, you were fact-checking everything. You didn't check a single fact. And I got another complaint right here. You got a reporter, Helene Cooper, attacking Donald Trump. Now, she's not doing it in the paper, but if she's doing it on Meet the Press with NBC, you know it slants her writing and her opinions. She was asked, do you think that Trump can have a constructive role in police reform? Her answer, no, I don't see how President Trump can play any kind of constructive role in what's going on right now in this movement for change because of who he is. In other words, she just flat out said the president is incapable. That's a reporter, a quote, correspondent. She went on to say, Trump is always talking about how much he's done for the black community, but if you can see from his actions, you see from the actions of this administration, that's patently untrue. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Look at the black unemployment numbers. And then she goes on to say, there's nobody in their right mind that can make that defense or even that case for President Trump. I do, I will, and I will continue. She is a correspondent appearing on Meet the Press with NBC, giving an opinion, not dealing as a reporter. Okay, Larry, she's not a reporter in that point. She's asked a question, she's given her opinion. Okay, but does that not slant her view going forward? I say, yes, it does. If you think not, you need help. You need help. Take a break. We'll come back. Our police reform is going to work.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So you're sitting in your favorite chair, you're enjoying your coffee, and then you see it. What is that? It's moving. Oh, it's a bug. Now, you don't care what kind. You just want it out of your house. Call Rottner Pest Solutions. They'll show up, take care of that bug and all of his friends. Now, you might think any pest control company could do the job, but with Rottner, all employees go through extensive background checks. And Rottner is proud to be the first company in Missouri to receive the Quality Pro Green designation. Plus, Rottner stands behind its work with a money-back guarantee, offering free inspections anytime. So after Rottner clears your house of any pesky critters, go back to your chair and that cup of coffee. Rottner Pest Solutions, Missouri's largest family-owned pest control company, serving more than just the St. Louis metro area. Go to Rottner.com, Rottner.com, and schedule a free inspection. Rottner.com.
Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So the president signing today a bill for police reform, encouraging police, as he said, to adopt the highest, strongest professional standards. And a question of reform of policing, what we're doing now, what makes sense and what doesn't. And that happens to be a great title for a piece co-authored by our guest, John Malcolm. John, glad to have you on board, sir.
Good to be with you.
So let's get into what do you think, first of all, what the president signed off on today. Any valid points in there? Anything that's really going to change and create police reform?
Yeah, actually, I think that there were a fair number of substantive proposals. He called for the attorney general to establish a database so that when there have been fully adjudicated cases and officers have been determined to have used excessive force, that data is entered so that, you know, you don't get bad cops kind of moving from one police force to another. He established standards for credentialing, national credentialing of police agencies and improved training and urged the attorney general to use discretionary funds to use that kind of training. He's going to have new programs, a co-responder program, for instance, to have social workers involved with the police officers when they are confronting people who are either victims or perpetrators of crimes, who are homeless, suffering from substance abuse disorders or mental diseases, to help de-escalate tensions. There was a lot of stuff in the executive order that I think will help the situation.
Well, but on the other side, they're going to say, no, not enough. You're not doing it. In fact, we need to defund the police or get rid of them entirely. They don't really want reform, do they?
No, well, look. I mean, if you go into this with the assumption that the system is corrupt and systemically racist from top to bottom, Then you come up with radical proposals like dismantling the police or defunding the police. Mind you, if you dismantle them, they have nothing to put in place, as you can see what's going on in Seattle now. I don't happen to believe that the police forces are systemically racist. You know, there are more African Americans serving as police officers now than ever before, more major chiefs of police who are African Americans. You know, there are 375 million, roughly, police civilian encounters every year. And last year, in 2019, according to the Washington Post, out of those 375 million encounters, 14 unarmed black people were killed. Now, that's 14 too many, but that hardly paints a picture of, you know, a white police force with itchy trigger fingers that are targeting, you know, black people. There are certainly are bad cops who ought to be weeded out. There are no doubt racist cops. There are racists, fortunately, in diminishing numbers in all walks of life. But I do not think that we have a systemic racial problem. There are problems, to be sure. Some of these reforms are welcome, if nothing else, to improve the professionalism of the police forces and to increase trust between the police and the communities that they have sworn to serve and protect. But I do not believe, I think you need a scalpel rather than a meat cleaver.
Good point. John Malcolm of the Heritage Foundation. I don't know if you've had a chance to see what the city of Albuquerque decided to do. They're now not going to send police officers on some 911 calls if it involves inebriation, maybe a drug overdose or some kind of event like that, that they're going to send social workers. In fact, their specific wording is, let me get here in front of you, we will have a first-of-its-kind cabinet-level department responding to calls on inebriation, homelessness, addiction, mental health. In other words, they don't think the officers are well-trained to handle those anyway, which I would tend to agree, but now they're going to send unarmed social workers into those scenes.
Well, so what the president's called for today is actually a hybrid of that, which is for social workers and police officers to arrive together. Because, you know, social workers may do a better job than police officers in most cases at de-escalating situations, but they're not going to de-escalate every situation, and some of those encounters may become quite violent. So to protect the social workers, if nothing else, the police officers ought to be there.
Yeah, but their attitude, we're going to send the unarmed social workers, not police officers. In other words, you're on your own going in there. If it goes upside down, then you can call back.
Well, good luck to them.
Yeah.
My daughter is a brand new social worker, and I certainly wouldn't want her going into a situation like that without somebody in the wings prepared to step in if it becomes a violent encounter.
Well, John, I was just, not knowing your daughter had stepped in, just in one of our earlier segments, I was praising those folks at Social Worker, how difficult that is, the folks they have to deal with, and doing God's work the best they can. And you're right. I praise them for what they're trying to do, but you put them in a situation like when you send even well-trained officers in, even a team of two, things can go upside down in a hurry.
No, that's absolutely true.
So the reforms going forward, for instance, Seattle City Council, since we mentioned that in that occupation zone, the new state, nation, where they want to call it right now, they now have voted unanimously in the Seattle City Council to ban any chokeholds. That might be appropriate and or better training, but then banning any crowd control devices. They will say the city cannot own, rent, store, or use any such chemical, weapons, pepper spray, tear gas, any foam-tipped projectiles, no water cannons, acoustical devices, anything that might cause pain or discomfort on multiple people trying to break up a riot. What are we supposed to do?
I have no idea. So the president's executive order also calls as part of the accreditation process to ban chokeholds unless deadly force is required, unless a police officer is you know, being threatened with death or substantial bodily harm and needs to use a chokehold to, you know, to stop the perpetrator in that case cold. But I don't know what the officials in Seattle expect these police officers to do. Maybe, you know, write invitations and thank you notes to people to get them to cease and desist lawless activity. I mean, it is one thing to rein in and review excessive use of force policies and incidents in which excessive use of force is potentially implicated. It's another thing to completely take away every tool in the tool chest of a police officer to deal with, you know, a very incendiary situation.
Right now, the mayor of Seattle and the governor of Washington State are content to just let it happen. But at some point, I mean, businesses are boarding up, leaving. They say they're being extorted or threatened.
Right.
And they can't get people come in that they normally have as clientele. These folks aren't there to spend money. They're there to take what they can and maybe hopefully a handout or steal from you, whatever. What do you think it's going to take the longer it goes on to go in and move them out? You're almost talking about a door-to-door fight like you're in Fallujah or something.
Yeah, you're also hearing that, you know, some of the people who are in Chaz, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, are now sending missives to outside friends saying, please send weapons. So
right.
I certainly hope that cooler heads prevail and that the summer of love comes into being and people actually desist and go home. But I don't know how it's going to end. And I certainly pray for the officers and the law-abiding citizens who are stuck there.
We saw, and I bring up Waco only in the sense of an event that went on forever and ever, and then a move was made, and whoever fired the first shot didn't make any difference. Everything, every hell broke loose at that point. In this case, the longer they get entrenched, I agree with you, and the missives going out, hey, bring weapons in. These are folks who are anti-guns to begin with, anti-having borders. The first thing they did was establish a border and put up their concrete barrier so you can't come and go at will.
It's a very dangerous situation, and certainly, you know, anybody who was around and watched the conflagration in Waco with David Koresh certainly doesn't want anything like that to happen again. But, you know, look, these are tense times, and something like that could happen.
The situation with George Floyd, I think a lot of folks see that, and it's gut-wrenching for the officer to keep his knee in the back of his neck for that long, as he said he can't breathe and did nothing to check on him. And the man is down on the ground restrained. I don't care what he did. I don't care what he did. At that point, you know, there should, in my opinion, should have been easing up. But now too many are now rushing to the Atlanta case where the guy was sleeping in the car, and then they try to cuff him. He starts going wild on them, attacking both officers, fighting, grabbing for their weapons, grabbing a taser, running, and then is shot by an officer. And they're trying to say it's one and the same kind of approach, officers being trigger-happy at that point. What's your view?
Well, I don't think there was any excuse for what happened to George Floyd. I mean, I don't care what it is that he did or how much he resisted. Once he was on the ground and he was restrained, that was it. And I believe that this was murder and that the appropriate charges have been leveled against Officer Chauvin and the other three officers who stood by and let it happen. You know, I'm going to withhold judgment on what happened in Atlanta. So the guy, you know, on the one hand, he was, you know, he hadn't committed a violent offense. He'd fallen asleep, probably had too much to drink in a Wendy's, you know, drive-through late at night. But so, you know, the police should have been escorting him home. On the other hand, once he grabbed an officer's taser and attempted to shoot that taser at an officer, the calculus changes because, of course, if he was able to stun the officer, then it's a short step from disarming that stunned officer and using a weapon against him. He was, however, running away, you know, so I haven't studied that video. I'm going to withhold judgment on that one. I tend to think with the guy running away and pretty far away from the officers that it was unjustified, but, you know, he did grab a taser, and there's no question that an officer has a taser used on him, he can quickly become a victim. And so I'm not rushing a judgment.
I agree we shouldn't rush to judgment and base it off that, but my opinion at this point is if he had not started fighting with him and fighting on the ground, that's a guy that's now assaulted police, has moved to a felony, and even if he gets away, you don't know what he's going to do down the street to someone else. But
that's true.
But
once once the officer is no longer in danger, you know, his ability to use deadly force becomes a lot more constrained. I'm not prepared to say that the officer was not in danger.
Yeah, and unless someone else down the road would be in danger. John, I appreciate your time and your insight. I truly do, sir.
Good to be with you.
Always glad to have you on board. John Malcolm of the Heritage Foundation. Some police reform would make sense, as he points out. Some doesn't, and sometimes it's fabricated on a lie, and we don't need that kind of, quote, reform, because it's not reform. It's just basically handcuffing police. Black Lives Matter. Is that a political action? Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me until you use me up. compare you and me.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You know, yesterday we posted that video from Atlanta at Larry Connors USA Facebook, and looking at some of the comments, Douglas said he got what he deserved, talking about the guy that was shot as he ran away killed. Scott, who's also a friend of mine, fellow poker player, said the guy was drunk. No reason to shoot someone in the back for having a non-lethal weapon. This cop will get what he deserves. Reform is on the way. These cops have gone way too far with what they're doing to people. What would have happened if cops just let him go? They have his car, his name, not a threat to society, running around drunk. I'm going to question that, Scott. Maybe he evaded police, he goes on to say, because of a situation like George Floyd. Maybe they shouldn't have handcuffed him. Every time someone is stopped for a DUI situation, they're taken out. They're going to handcuff them. That's Scott. You know that's standard procedure. I heard Malcolm say maybe they could have just taken him home. They're not to be a taxi service. And then, just because he breaks free from the cop and he's running after already assaulting two officers, for whatever reason, maybe he did have George Floyd playing his mind. No one knows, and we'll never know at this point. But rather than submitting and going with the officers, he started that violence, attacking the officers, was grappling for their weapons at one point. Now he's running away. He's got the taser in his hand. As I said, does he know it's a taser? Does he think it's a real gun? I don't know. Sometimes officers aren't aware when they grab for it. The officer shooting at him, did he realize for a fact it was a taser? And beyond that, he is running away. Could you just let him run? Well, you want to let him run and maybe run into your house nearby? All hopped up or whatever he is, maybe it would be fine. Or you can't let a felon like that just escape if you can. Yeah, well, could you shot him in the legs? It always goes back to that. And why the back? Well, the back means not necessarily that he caught him when he's actually running away, but as he turned. I don't know. We don't know the stats. I still say if he just obeyed the police order, everything was fine until they started to cuff him. And yes, I think he had to be cuffed because of the inebriated state he was in. Tucker Carlson spent a lot of time last night in his monologue talking about Black Lives Matter, basically saying how popular it is and basically that he sees it as a political party that cannot be criticized unless you want to face professional or personal consequences.
The media, in their relentlessly fawning coverage, usually describe Black Lives Matter as an activist group or a protest movement. But that's deception by understatement. Black Lives Matter is not a collection of marchers with signs. It's not a conventional political lobby like Planned Parenthood or the NRA. It's not pressuring Congress to pass some narrow new set of laws. Black Lives Matter is far more ambitious than that. It is working to remake the country and then to control it. It's a political party. As of tonight, Black Lives Matter may be the single most powerful political party in the United States. Nobody says that out loud, but politicians understand it perfectly well. If nothing else, they understand power. They can smell it at great distances. And that's why they're lining up to bow before Black Lives Matter.
Yep, they smell power, and they get folks lining up to bow down to them. But Tucker is also pointing out Black Lives Matter is considering it's immune to any criticism.
Black Lives Matter now enjoys almost complete immunity from criticism. This is unprecedented for an American political movement. But Black Lives Matter is even more powerful than that. It has single-handedly revised our moral framework. Yes, black lives do matter. That is a statement of fact. And no decent person doubts that it is true, because it is. And it's true precisely because every life matters. We are all human beings, every one of us. We have souls. Skin color is irrelevant to moral value. Until recently, this was considered obvious. Saying it was regarded as a virtue. All lives matter equally. All of us were created by God. In the end, all of us will die. Nothing can change that. Not wealth, not fame, not race. Every life is precisely as valuable as every other life. And by the way, that idea forms the basis of the Christian faith. It's the entire premise behind our founding documents. And yet suddenly, thanks to Black Lives Matter, you can no longer say it out loud. Affirming the fundamental equality of all people is now considered hate speech.
I have a young man that I like, I count as a friend, and we had such a discussion on Black Lives Matter. And he said, but the point is, you know, just trying to emphasize how black lives have been basically subjected to abuse and so forth through all these years. I understand that. It's a terrible part of our history. But I'm stick by the opinion that if you say Black Lives Matter, you are, even though you don't say other lives don't matter. To me, that's the way I take it. On the other side, you can take it the other way. That's your perception. But anyone that would come out and say all white lives matter, I'd say no, all lives matter, all of them. If we're going to be concerned about lives in particular, let's begin at the abortion clinics. And let's also be concerned about, unfortunately, the crime areas that are minority areas and more black lives are lost in there at the hands of thugs that are also of similar skin color. Doesn't justify anything, and it does not wipe out what we have learned in this nation about our terrible sin and what we'll never get over. It's a stain forever. We should learn from it. But I would just rather see us emphasize all lives matter. But the worst part is at the very beginning, innocence of Black Lives Matter got hijacked and has become, as Tucker Carlson pointed out, a political weapon. And don't you dare speak out against it unless you want to pay a price. That's our program for today. Mark it on your calendar. We'll be back here again tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.